You're listening to Upon Further Review, presented by Coors Light on the official Raiders podcast network. Here's your host, Eddie Pascal.
Raider Nation, what is going on? Eddie Pascal and Engineer Jim here in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada, where somehow, some way, your Las Vegas Raiders took down the Denver Broncos 32-31. And to help us break it all down, as friend of the program, you see him all the time here on TV on News 3LV here in the desert, our guy Jesse Merrick. And Jesse, I got really nervous that we were going to see it again tonight, or this afternoon, I should say. I got really nervous we had another historic collapse on our hands, but thankfully, the Raiders figured out a way to end the season on a high note.
Hey, just win, baby, right? I mean, I know we've said it so many times. I couldn't believe it. You and I were talking before we started this that it felt like it was going to be the same thing again, like the Dolphins game. They even had the penalty that got thrown in there. But man, it was an exciting game. I even joked afterwards on Twitter. I was like, man, Raider Nation, have yourself a beer or 50. Because like the last couple games, I'm sure took 10 to 20 years off everyone's lives. But hey, look, again, an exciting way to end the season. You end on a win. You go into the offseason on a high note and look to build off of, what was a disappointing season overall, but stuff that you can definitely take with you going into the future.
And 8-8 sounds a lot better than 7-9. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter, right? Like, we all know going into this game, you don't want to call this a meaningless game because obviously there's a lot on the line, but in terms of postseason aspirations, all that stuff, that ship has sailed. But it does feel good to say, hey, you look at last year, there's an improvement in the win column. I know it's a colossal disappointment this past month and a half, but it does feel like, all right, we have a little positive momentum headed into an offseason that we still don't know what the offseason looks like, right? Like, I mean, who knows what song you and I are singing in 3 months? But I want to start with one thing, and we were talking about this in the box at Allegiant. I would like to, before I even get going, I'd like to crack an ice cold Coors Light for the coaching staff for the Denver Broncos for really just fumbling, no pun intended, that final series or whatever you want to call it. Like, how on earth do you call not one, but two timeouts? Like, we've talked about this. You know a lot more situational football, X's and O's football than I do. How do you do that?
No idea. I don't get it at all. I got to give a shout out to Vic Tafer. He said it on Twitter. He was like, Greg Williams and Fangio got to be the MVP of the Raiders season, for blowing those last couple games there. I mean, hey, sometimes people just don't understand clock management. I'm not an expert, but I know that's not what you're supposed to do.
It was truly incredible. But we were listening to the post game press conferences before we hopped on here, and Coach Gruden said it. Darren Waller kind of alluded to it as well. He goes, "There's something a little poetic in this game. The week 17, it comes down to your two Pro Bowlers. It comes down to Josh Jacobs getting in the end zone. It comes down to Darren Waller getting that 2-point conversion. And you look at this season, and over the next couple of weeks, we're gonna be like everyone else. We're gonna have a few days to kind of sit back, relax, and then we'll really start taking stock of 2020 in totality. But man." You look at those two pieces and this offensive line for the most part, and the cupboard is not bare for the Raiders. I know that the past month and a half, like I said, has been a colossal disappointment, but you look at things and it could be a lot worse. And I know 8-8 is not where you want to be, but man, Darren Waller, if he's not the best tight end in the NFL, I mean, take your pick at this point, but my goodness. And it just felt good. It felt right that that's how the season ended with Josh and D-Wall doing their thing.
It really did, yeah. I mean, and again, too, Josh had aside from the touchdown, and had a quiet day, through most of the three quarters there. So you're like, all right, when are they going to get him rolling? And then he breaks that one off and then gets it down in there at the end. I mean, that's big. And even Waller, had they lost this game, he's probably talking about the fumble and, the things that didn't go his way in this game. And so, he's able to break the record, come through at the end there in that situation where everyone's thinking, throw it to Waller. And we've seen him not go to him a handful of times down there in the red zone. This time they did it. He comes through, and again, you go to the offseason with a good feeling. You can't beat that. And like you said, the cupboard is not bare. The offense has so many nice pieces. Obviously, some things up in the air, maybe with Aguilar, whether or not he ends up coming back and stuff. But the offense is a top 10 offense. You just got to figure out some things on defense. And this is a team that's going in the right direction, regardless of how disappointing this year might have been, given the fact that they were 6-3.
And I mean, you and I have talked about it a lot, and I think it's been the conversation surrounding this team for, I guess much of the past 6 weeks, is the trouble in the red zone, right? This team has had a really hard time getting in the red zone. We saw it earlier today, right? We saw it this afternoon. But I think that final drive, getting in the red zone and being so decisive down there with Josh, with Darren. I mean, there was a lot of confusion on that 2-point conversion. I mean, there was like, we're looking at each other like, what's going on? The announcers, Beth Moens and Tiki Barber, were like, guys are coming in, guys are coming out. But a huge shout out to Vic Fangio for calling that timeout. But all the same, it did feel good to kind of put a punctuation mark on that portion of the Raiders game. Be like, listen, it wasn't perfect this year. It was far from perfect, but we can do it. It might not be the easiest. It might not be the prettiest, but we can score touchdowns in the red zone. So I think that's something you kind of hang your hat on as well if you're a fan of this team headed into the offseason now.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. You know, you, like you said, you cross the I, dot the T on that one and can say that you did it. You know, you don't have to live with that, like the yips of it, I guess, going in the offseason, mm-hmm. use the baseball term there, you know, and you build off of, hey, having a guy in Waller that nobody can cover. I mean, the thing that really got me as watching the game, you know, he catches the ball that breaks the record. And then the next play, he's in the backfield, you know, pass protecting. I mean, tight ends aren't supposed to be able to do what he does in so many different ways, you know. So, yeah, getting the red zone stuff done, huge. And this is an offense that still actually scores in the red zone when they get there. It's just too many field goals. So they get plenty of like points there. It's just a matter of converting it into those touchdowns. And that's something that I think John Gruden is really going to go into the offseason and probably spend a lot of time in the lab. We know that dude watches film like nobody's business. He's going to figure it out. Obviously, he was saying the same thing heading into this year that he wanted to fix that. Couldn't get it done. But I think now he's really going to be able to figure out, especially with the way that Waller really emerged as one of the elite players in the league.
You know, speaking of those field goals too, a big shout out to my close personal friend, Daniel Carlson, for the points record now. I mean, he very quietly, I mean, I don't want to get on my soapbox too much. He's a Pro Bowl kicker this year. I know that Justin Tucker is a guru, and you know, if you put Daniel in, you got to take him out. But man, he has had one heck of a 2020, and especially considering his last year in 2019 with the ups and the downs, for him to kind of be as good as he was, he's going to finish this year without missing a field goal from 50 plus. I mean, the special teams battery of him and AJ and Sieg, I know it's not overly sexy, but that's another thing headed into 2021. You got to feel good about your young core special teamers too. So a big shout out to the special teams guys.
Yeah, I mean, for you, you got to be pumped about that.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it.
that's your jam. I know you love the teams. And especially too for AJ Cole, man, to be able to finish on a high note. He pinned him deep on that one punt there. You know, that was big. He'd had a couple games of forget down the stretch here. And he gets to, you know, solve a little problems for himself, too, going to the offseason and end it on a high note.
And I'm just looking at the numbers now, too, Jesse. And this is like kind of, I mean, I'll give you the live reaction. Derek threw for 371 yards today. 24-38 for 371. Jeez.
Yeah, I was like the quietest 371 yeah. I've ever seen. That was what I was thinking once. When I pulled it up, I was like, you gotta be kidding me. 371? You know, and he completed 63% of his passes. I mean, they had four turnovers on the day. In your head, you're thinking there's no way he threw for that much, and there's no way he completed 63% of his passes, but he did. So, like, Derek Carr, again, quietly being that dude for the Raiders that just gets it done. I mean, it may not always be pretty. You know, sometimes he's a little late on some balls, but in crunch time, he gets it done. I believe that was his 21st career fourth quarter comeback. So, I mean, that's the most of anybody since he's into the league. You got to give the man his respect.
Yeah, and, you know, I think Coach kind of put, you know, summed it up perfectly. He goes, well, if there's a guy in a two-minute drill that's better than Derek, you know, I don't know who it is. I mean, Derek loves that moment. And I think that we would like to not have to have these games come down to the two-minute drill all the time and for Derek to have all these fourth-quarter comebacks. But, I mean, like Coach said, I mean, if there's a guy that if that's what you're going to do, if that's going to be your bread and butter, there's worse things. Like, if you're the two-minute drill guy, if that's your jam, why not? But I also think that it's important, too. And we kind of touched on it a second ago, but the Raiders get over 100 yards rushing again. Josh kind of gets heated up late. And I didn't kind of put this together until I was looking at the numbers post game. But the Raiders have now, they're going to finish 2020 with back-to-back-to-back 100-yard rushing games. And I know there's only one win out of the three of those games, but it's good to see with this makeshift offensive line without Trent Brown, with, you know, without Denzel Good today, that, you know, they can still be an effective group. I mean, how do you think the offensive line held up, all things considered, today?
Man, I mean, today I think they held up really well. I mean, you know, obviously the Broncos didn't have Chubb, so that's a big lift to him not having him out there. But for the most part, you know, like Carr got sacked three times. You know, there were a couple times when the pocket was kind of collapsing around him, so you would have liked to see a little bit better protection around the edges. But there's also some times where Carr was holding onto the ball a little longer than he probably should have, but that's also a credit to the coverage downfield. Maybe some receivers weren't getting open. You know, I'll have to watch it again on the broadcast. We obviously don't get the luxury of seeing the entire field to see what the coverage is like. But a couple times, Rondae Barber noted that guys were just blanketed and there wasn't anywhere for them to go. So I think, again, like you said, I didn't realize that with three, as you said, it's three straight games with 100 yards.
Mm-hmm.
To close the year out. I mean, man, win or not in some of those games, that's definitely something to build off of with what this offensive line has continuously gone through. So you got to like that. And then again, I want to go back and look and see what John Simpson managed to do. But, you know, coach said he was the guy he was going to be looking out for. We don't know what the future holds for Incognito. So maybe Simpson did some good things and can kind of get it rolling. And I think the pieces that they have in terms of depth along the offensive line really showed themselves this year down the stretch, whenever you really want to point to it. So that's huge for the Raiders going forward, regardless of the starting five that are there. Just the depth side of it, I think, is great. And something you can build off of.
Yeah, and I think that you bring up John Simpson, which is a great point. And I want to hear what Coach says tomorrow on Monday during his post-game press conference, because he'll for sure get asked about how the rookie played. But you look at it, and at first glance, I mean, I guess the best thing you say about him is he didn't stand out, right? There were no glaring, oh God, there's John Simpson. And if you're a rookie still trying to figure it out in the interior of the offensive line in the NFL, that's probably a net positive, right? I mean, like I said, there were no glaring, like, oh God, there he is moments. But, you know, the offensive line, we were talking about this yesterday, kind of just getting ready for today. And we were talking and we were having the conversation of like, okay, headed into 2021, what do you have? What do you know 100% that you have? You have a really good offensive line and you have probably the best tight end or one, you know, 1A, whatever you want to call him. You got Darren Waller. And those are pretty good things to build around. Like, we know, we have seen time and time again, especially in the playoffs, and we'll see it over the next month, the teams that win the line of scrimmage, the offensive line and the defensive line, are the teams that end up winning games in January and February. So I think that, yes, this year has been disappointing, incredibly disappointing. There are so many things that we're going to go look back at over the next 7-14 days and going to be like, why, oh, why? But you got a good offensive line and you got an absolute stud out wide. So there are things to feel good about. But I'm curious. I want to ask you about one tweet that you had during the game. And you tweeted out that Corey Littleton has actually had a really nice game and a half. And I've noticed the same thing too, just in terms of him being more active, him being around the ball. But like, when you look at him over the past, let's call it six quarters, whatever it is, what has he done that's been different? Because you and I both know that the fans have been after this guy. And I don't think Corey has had the kind of 2020 that he wanted, but seems like he's a guy who'd at least finished on a high note.
Yeah, he did. And I thought he was better in coverage and he was just better making tackles. As simple as those two things sound, you know, those were things that he wasn't doing well enough throughout the year. I mean, I think it was like during the Colts game, I think I went back and looked at it. And for a handful of games there was like one linebacker in the top five in tackles each game. And like, that's not a good thing. You don't want your DBs to be leading in tackles all the time. And against the Raiders, a lot of teams are going to try and, you know, spread you out and make the corners make those tackles. That's what they're going to do against the Raiders. But, like, to see a guy like Littleton, whose job is to come in there, be an athlete, fly around, be all over the field, make those tackles, that's something that really impressed me, to see him actually start to do that towards the back half of the season and maybe settle in a little bit on defense, especially when they're missing guys around him as well. You know, it would have been easy for him to kind of crumble and kind of continue to do what he had done. So just making the tackles was half the battle, because we know missed tackles have been an issue for the Raiders on defense all year long. So, yeah, I was impressed to see him do that. And he didn't look as lost in coverage, because there was times that you're like, man, what is this guy doing in coverage? They brought him here to be that guy that can handle the running backs or can handle the tight ends. And he did a much better job, took a step forward in that. So I think for him too, like we've talked with a handful of guys here, they're heading into the offseason on a high note, kind of starting to almost maybe figure it out, like the light switch has been flipped for him.
You know, I'm looking at the defensive stats right now, Jesse. Two of the Raiders' top three tacklers today are linebackers. So Morrow ends up being the team leader with 10. Littleton, actually, yes, technically tied for second with 9. So like you said, man, he's active. He's bringing guys to the ground, which is nice to see. And he's just, you know, he's in the mix. And I feel like there were so many weeks this year where we were like, where's Corey Littleton? Is he here? You know, I know he's here. I mean, I look at the snaps and I see him out there 80, 85% of the time. But so it was nice to see him in the mix, see him active, see him involved. Another guy that was active, involved, and it was great to see, Bryan Edwards. Welcome back, Bryan Edwards. We missed you. It was so good to see you. And I feel like today we got just the tease, right? We just got kind of that, this is what he could be in 2021. This is why we picked him where we picked him. So, I mean, you got to feel good for him. Like, another guy finishing the season on a high note, a season that probably didn't go exactly the way he wanted it to. But hey, you know what? He's finishing 2020 on a high note and has a nice building block to get into next season for sure.
Yeah, and the thing that popped into my head as soon as he caught that pass, I was like, that's exactly why they picked him. That's the play that they wanted him to make. You go back and look at his highlight tape, he's doing tons of things just like that. You know, be the big-bodied guy with the strong hands, go up and get it, and he just did that. I mean, so that's massive for him. I mean, you can even see in the post-game interview, you know, for the fans, go back and look at it if you didn't watch it live. You know, you could just tell how happy he is. I mean, that had to be just a big monkey off his back to be able to get the touchdown and do that and show up. You know, we no longer, hopefully down the stretch or next year, won't have to tweet, oh, a Bryan Edwards sighting, you know. Mm-hmm. That's huge for a rookie, for confidence and things like that going into the next year. And he's got that year under his belt and the weirdest year possible in the NFL. But, you know, now he can go into it knowing the offense, knowing what his role is going to be. He and Ruggs can kind of work with each other to figure out what the heck they're going to do in this offense and how to work with each other in it as well. But, yeah, I mean, just for Bryan Edwards to get a touchdown, massive, massive, especially the way that he did it, you know, to prove to himself, too, because confidence is half the battle.
And not to look too far down the road, but, I mean, this offseason, I'm very, very intrigued to see what happens with the wide receiver group just in totality. I mean, if you're Mike Mayock and John Gruden, you got some pretty big time decisions coming down the pipeline. What do you do with Tyrell? Do you bring Aguilar back? I don't think Zay, is Zay Jones a free agent? I'm going to have to go check our PR list, but I think Zay might be up as well. I mean, you got some questions that you got to have answers to. And so I think if you're Bryan Edwards, you got to feel pretty good about what you put on tape today, right?
You do, yeah, and like you said, I mean, this is going to be a tough offseason in terms of what to do with the receiving core. I mean, you noted, look, you've got Waller, but man, I think, and I had this conversation with a Raiders fan on Twitter, I think, and before the game even started, before Aguilar had another good game, you know, I think you have to bring him back. I mean, you've heard Gruden talk about him, you've heard Carr talk about him, how much they like him, what he's done for him, and when Gruden was talking about, you know, because people kept asking, what about Ruggs, why isn't he getting the targets? Well, he said, hey, just so everyone's clear, we're targeting Waller and we're targeting Aguilar because those have been our two guys. So you don't want to let your guy, your number two guy, walk away. You know, I mean, look, he hasn't had the consistency, but he did have a career year here, but he's doing exactly what you asked of him. And for the most part, has gotten rid of the drops issue. So what he's going to command, it might be around 15 milli. I think for what he did to this offense, he's worth it. But then, like you said, you throw Tyrell into the mix and it's a crazy offseason. I'm glad I don't have to make those decisions.
Yeah.
We just get to talk about the guys that actually have to make those decisions because they're tough ones for sure.
And it's great. It's great for us. It's a win-win. We don't have to make the decision. And two, we get to talk about it. It's great fodder for conversation, right? Like,
I pray
to God at some point that you and I in the next 6 months before the season starts again can sit in a bar. We can drink some beers, maybe like two or three or maybe a few more and just like talk about it.
A couple of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Because these are the conversations that we're gonna have regardless over the next 6 months. I would just prefer if we could do it in person. But another guy, you know, kind of switching back to the defensive side of the ball. God, it felt good to see Max Crosby get out there again today, too. It felt good to see Max get home. And outside of the sack at the end, it felt like that was the active Max that we saw. The active Max we got so used to seeing as a rookie. And I know that he's had so much more attention on him this year, and I totally get that. But I really did have shades of 2019 Max when I saw him out there doing his thing, flying around, tattoos ablazing. It was good to see, man. It made me happy.
Yeah, arms flailing.
Yeah.
I mean, he's one of my favorite guys to watch game in and game out. Like, I find myself, when I go back to watch the game the second time around, I find myself saying, like, hey, don't just watch Max the whole time, because, like, it is fun to watch him because he's such a high-motor guy. But, yeah, man, to see him get rolling again, and I think he blocked both of those kicks, if I'm
he
not did,
he for sure. He for sure the one at the end. And you might be right,
Because he took credit for both of them.
Well, he's a smart – hey, he's not a rookie anymore. He's a smart guy. He's a smart guy.
Yeah, yeah. He's a savvy guy. So, but, yeah, I think for him, too, big to end the season the way they did it. Also for the fact of, like, he's got a year under his belt realizing how teams are going to game plan to him and go after him because he's shown that he's the guy and he's the one that they got to watch out for. So knowing that and being able to build off of, okay, I got to figure this out, because he did have that dry spell. You know, I don't know off the top of my head how long it was, but I thought someone said since
seven weeks, I believe. So the last one before tonight was week 10, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So
I mean, you know, to go that long, you know, and that's one of those things where another confidence thing, you know, I know we keep saying that, but just to get it to show, hey, I can do it. I'm not entering the offseason on a dry spell, and it hasn't been, you know, you don't see people pulling up the stats of like, oh, it's been, you know, 365 days and blah, 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 since how long since he's had a sack. Like, no, that's done. You start the season and you kind of keep it rolling, pick it up from there and have another offseason to master the craft and get even bigger, stronger, and faster to flail those arms around and make it exciting to watch another year.
100%. And I'm speaking of conversations we'll have in the offseason. I mean, this D-line needs some help too. I mean, Max, God bless him, is, you know, I think Max is an above average pass rusher in this league. I mean, you don't get to 10 sacks as a rookie on accident, but he needs some help, no doubt about it. He needs some help over the next couple months, no doubt there.
Yeah, and I think one thing too is, you know, Klee gets a lot of mess that he shouldn't get. He improved a lot, and people need to go back and watch the tape because that dude had showed some things before. I mean, realize it too. He had COVID. We don't know exactly how much that does affect someone in that sense in terms of your wind and things like that. But he did a good job against the run. He had a good game against the Jets, you know, against Mekhi Becton, who's a good tackle. You know, and he's shown some things. He flashed a bit. So I think those are two guys that you could really build off of. You just got to figure out what you're doing at the tackle spot. Obviously, I'll say it, the Malik Collins thing just didn't work out. You know, good thing it was a one-year deal, if I do remember right.
Yep.
You know, you see what happens. And in the draft, obviously, they're going to address some things. Maybe find a big space eater. People obviously talking about linebacker. One guy that really flashed and was impressive to me was Nick Morrow. He's a guy that I think needs to get a lot more attention.
Another free agent, too.
Exactly. So that's a guy I think that the Raiders got to bring back because Gruden, and I think they're going to try to, because Gruden even said he was quite possibly our best linebacker. I honestly think that he was, you know, for a D3 guy to come in and do what he did, man, when he first started getting some looks and actually started getting some playing time, I would love to see what he's got to head into an entire offseason to come back and be ready again to know that, hey, he's going to be one of the guys that's counted on.
Yeah, shout out to Greenville one time too, man. I'm pretty sure he is the only, he's told me this before, he's the only, it's either him or there was one other guy like 50 years ago who made it to the NFL from Greenville. But yeah, I mean, Morrow's just, you know, and we're, you know, we're so biased too. Where Morrow's such a good dude, and I always have such a soft spot in my heart for the undrafted free agents, but he played his ass off this year. And like you said, he very likely was this team's best linebacker from week one to week 17. So he's a guy I would love to see back in silver and black next year. I think he is a net, he's one of those guys that he reminds me a little bit of. I don't know if you remember Danico Autry when he was here. That might be a little bit before you started covering us, but Danico was a guy who didn't put up overly flashy numbers, right? He was just a really good player, and we talked about it all the time where we said Danico isn't going to be the next Khalil Mack, right? He's not going to be Howie Long 2.0, but he is, any team that you put him on, they automatically get better. And I think the same thing kind of goes with Morrow, right? Where he's not going to be the next Brian Urlacher, but this defense is going to be better in 2021 if he's on it. So I hope they bring him back, but we'll see what happens over the next couple months. But I know you're up front on the time crunch, Jesse. So what are we going to do? We're going to crack some cold Coors Lights. We're going to look ahead. Well, actually, we're not even going to look ahead. We're going to look back, I suppose, at what happened over the past 17 weeks ever so briefly. But before we do that, let's just hear a quick message from our friends at Allegiant.
Touchdown, Las Vegas.
Since starting Allegiant some 20 years ago, we've flown more than 100 million people to be with those they love. We're pilots, flight attendants, and technicians, but we're also parents, spouses, and neighbors. And just like you, we're excited to reconnect with the people and places that matter most. That's why we're going the distance for health and safety, on the ground and in the air. Because the further we go now, the safer it'll be to go farther tomorrow. Allegiant, the official airline of the Las Vegas Raiders. Low fares, nonstop flights, only at Allegiant.com.
And we're back with our friend Jesse Merrick. And Jesse, so I look at week 17 games a little bit like I look at week one. I mean, obviously, if you're playing for something, I look at it a little bit differently. But in this situation, I don't know if what happens in week 17 drastically changes my opinion of the 2020 Raiders. I really don't. You know, is it great that they won? 100%. Would I rather be 8-8 than 7-9? 1,000%. But in this grand scheme of things, did you see anything today that changed anything, any of your preconceived notions about this team prior to kickoff?
Nah, especially not against a team like the Broncos. You know, I mean, look, we knew that the defense was bad and they gave up a lot of yards. I think 420 plus, maybe even a little bit more, you know, to Denver. So, look, we all know the defense is the top priority for them next year. I mean, they're going to spend the money there. They spent, you know, you hear all the people talking about how much more money they spent on offense. Well, it's because they had to, you know, they had to fix the offense. They had to get it in the right spot. The offense is in a good spot. No matter what happens with the receivers that we dove into, they're in a good spot. So defensively, we knew that what corrections needed to be made. And I nothing changed my mind. You know, I think, again, like we mentioned, guys like Max, you know, finishing on the right foot, Morrow having another good game going into the offseason, maybe one last kind of prove it to be like, hey, guys, bring me back. You know, but other than that, now, like you said, you can't take too much away from it. You know what a team is in December. That's my deal. A team exposes who they are in December. So from there, you know, when it doesn't matter anymore for them, then it's just, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's, like we said, just the morale of it. And for us, like, on the team side, like, dear God, we needed this game. Like, we needed this game in the worst way, right? Like, you need to have something you can kind of feel excited about and fired up about heading into not only this week, but headed into the offseason now. But you're right. I mean, this defense, I mean, frankly, is going to have to be rebuilt over the next 6 months. I mean, I don't know how many guys that are currently on this defense that are going to be here at the start of the league year. I mean, we'll see. I don't know how many guys on this 11, the starting 11, are going to be starting on this team come week one of 2021. So the defense is what it is. The offense, like you said, is in a good place. I think you feel really good about some of the pieces you have there. Still some questions, I think it's fair to say. But, you know, all things considered, like you said, this team is who, you know, they are who they are. I think that when I looked at this team headed into the regular season, headed into week one, taking out COVID, taking all that stuff out of the picture, I was like, knowing the schedule, knowing who's on the docket, I was like, I think 7-9, 8-8 would be a fair place to end up. And lo and behold, they ended up at 8-8. Now, you obviously feel like they should have been 9-7, 10-6, somewhere in that general vicinity, but it's what they earned. And I don't know. I mean, it is nice to end the season on a high note, but at this point, it's putting lipstick on a pig a little bit, I suppose, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think you classify this season as a what could have been season, you know, and we can all talk about it throughout all the off season. But again, that's when Mayock and Gruden are going to get into the lab and figure out how the heck to fix this defense and start making those moves, you know. So I think that's where you take the good with the bad. You take the positives that you had throughout the year, and you take the bad with it. And realize also that it's a young team that just went through a COVID season with no real offseason, and they switched defensive coordinators late in the year and all these different things. And they had tons of injuries. You know, they're all excuses. But honestly, people can say, I don't want to hear the excuses. But they're valid excuses, you know? I mean, and a lot of teams had to deal with this. But at the end of the day, I think it's still progress. If you look at it on paper, it's progress in the win column. But it's progress overall because they're a young team that's growing. And I think this is a team that you're going to continue to see take strides. And at the end of the day, the defense only needs to be good. They don't need to be great. If you get them into a middle-of-the-road defense, the offense is good enough to win games. You just don't want to find yourself in a position where you have to score like 35 points a game in order to win. You know, if you can bring it down to where, you know, you give up like 25 points a game, I think this team is going to be a playoff team.
And you talk about the excuses, right? But it's at some point, it's just reality. It's not excuses. It's just the reality that this team lived in 2020. And it was frustrating. It was disappointing. There were moments where we wanted to pull our hair out because of it. But it's just the reality of it. And like you said, you know, it's a young team, a team that's going to get better. And Coach said it post-game. And he was talking about the game, but he said, this was a game filled with great moments and bad moments. And you look at the season in general, it was a season of great moments, and it was a season of bad moments. So before we get you out of here, because I know you actually unfortunately have to go to your real job, you can't hang out with us all night. Let's crack a few ice cold Coors Lights and hit the dusty trail. So as is tradition, you are our visitor, you are our guest. Take us away, sir.
Man, I mean, how can you not give one to D. Wall? You know, he comes up with a 2-point conversion that wins the game. 3 straight games with 100 plus receiving yards. Obviously, he breaks the record. What he's done this entire year. So this is like a whole 6-pack to D. Wall for what he did the entire time, you know, throughout the season and emerging as one of the elite guys. So that's who I definitely got to give it to for sure.
I'm going to do an honorary one, I guess like an honorable mention for Jason Witten. We haven't even talked about Jason Witten, who set the NFL record for most games for a tight end. So that's pretty cool. But I'm going to crack a cold one. I'm going to go for Bryan Edwards, man. I mean, just, you know, he has the touchdown, but I think it was so much more than that. I think that it was, like you said, it was having some it was building some confidence headed into 2021. It was showing not only himself, but it was showing the fans like, hey, this is what I can do, guys. This is the guy that I want to be. This is the guy that I can be. So for him to kind of have those handful of moments tonight, I thought was really cool. And he looks good, man. I mean, if we can get that version of Bryan Edwards for 16 weeks next year, I like that. And I tweeted it out too. I was like, let's not forget, this dude just turned 22. Like, he turned 22 a month ago. Like, he's going to be fine. I know this year was frustrating, filled with ups and downs, but he's going to be good. So I feel good about that. One for Bryan Edwards. And yeah, man. It could have been worse. It could have been a lot worse. And at the end of the day, you and I are sitting here, we're having a conversation about a Raiders win, and that's all anyone's going to remember for the next, gosh, 2, 3, 4 months until the draft starts. So, on that note, for Eddie Pascal, Engineer Jim, our guest this week, Jesse Merrick, and everyone in Silver and Black Productions who helps get us from A to Z, we thank you deeply, humbly, and oh so sincerely. And just a reminder, Raider Nation, please stay at home, keep wearing your mask, washing your hands, doing all that kind of stuff, because it's fun to be at Allegiant Stadium. Jesse and I were there a lot this year, but it's not the same without you guys. And if you want to get back there and we want to enjoy this 21 together, we got to work together to make it happen. So, as I said, this is it for our final post-game edition of Upon Further Review. But you're not done with this yet because we're contractually obligated. We will be with you every week through the offseason. So we are not going anywhere, and we'll see you guys Thursday night for our normal episode of Upon Further Review.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Upon Further Review, presented by Coors Light on the official Raiders Podcast Network.